Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you. Explain it in a way that's easier to understand. This season, we're tackling the cost of learning. Anyone who owns a home knows that the bulk of their property taxes go to their local school district. Using property taxes to pay for a school is a system that has been used in Ohio since the 1800s. But in recent decades, homeowners feel that it has grown out of control. This hour, we're talking about different ways school districts ask their communities for money. Later, we're going to hear from Olin Tangi, who has a bond issue, and Parma, who has a property tax levy. But first, we're talking with Westerville Schools. After a property tax levy failed last year, Westerville is taking a different approach. They're asking for an income tax levy. To tell us more, we have Angela Hamburg, superintendent for Westerville City Schools. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning, Amy. Thank you.
So I think the best place to start is to ask why you decided to go with the income tax levy. Most school districts use property tax levies and bond issues. So an income tax levy is more rare nowadays. Why did you decide to try this?
Well, and the ballot issue that we're putting on is actually an earned income tax. So I wanted to clarify that because school districts are able to choose from a traditional income tax or an earned income tax. And so we have decided on an earned income tax because it does not apply to pensions, Social Security, you know, any type of retirement benefits, unemployment, or interest or dividend earnings. And so we made that decision as a result of feedback we received from our community, especially our senior citizens who have perhaps been in their homes for, you know, decades, and they are struggling with the increase in home value and the resulting increase in property tax in many cases. And so we wanted to diversify our revenue. As a school district, we have two options, a type of income tax or a type of property tax. And so wanted to look at that. There are lots of districts across Ohio that do have income taxes. We have not seen a lot in the suburban Central Ohio area, but they are coming across the state.
Okay, so you're asking for a 0.75 increase in earned income tax, and it'll raise about $24 million a year for Westerville Schools. And you mentioned wanting to help senior citizens, have so that their property taxes don't go up, but also maybe those senior citizens also are not working in Westerville, right? So they're not going to pay this either way. Is that right?
Well, and I want to clarify, so a school district income tax is not on workers, it's on residents. Okay. So a municipal income tax is typically on workers or residents. A school district tax is just for residents anyway.
Okay, so who would be paying this? Explain to me who pays the 0.75 increase.
Anyone that lives within the boundaries of our school district who has wages or salaries or net self-employment income.
Okay. And you had a property tax and bond issue on the ballot a year ago, and that failed. And voters basically expressed that they're tired of high property taxes. They thought it was too much. After that failure, you eliminated some staff and cut $9 million. Was that noticeable to students? Did students feel that cut over the past year?
I think we did everything within our power to make it not directly hit that classroom experience. It's impacted more of our service levels in other places, how, you know, quickly we're able to address issues, get back with families. The work didn't go away, as we say, so we have distributed that work to other people throughout the district. But we're at a point now where we've made those types of cuts that we can make. And if we are not able to secure additional revenue, we will be looking at cuts that will unfortunately impact the classroom experience more for students.
Yes, you had said if this earned income tax, the 0.75 increase, if it doesn't pass, you have a pretty long list of things that will happen. You said that 124 positions would be cut. This includes elementary art, music, PE, and library. It also includes reducing AP classes and College Credit Plus classes and phasing out the International Baccalaureate program. So I have to imagine after you announced such dramatic cuts, you got some pushback. Will you really have to do all of that?
I wouldn't say we really got a lot of pushback. As we messaged it, we really talked about, you know, we've been trying to communicate with the community in an ongoing way. So we talked about this. Obviously, we were on the ballot last year. We also in the spring spent a lot of time educating our community on our efforts to try to increase our state funding and the advocacy work we did around that as a community. So I think a lot of people in our community have been dialed in, and they understand that we are at a point where, you know, we can't continue to deficit spend and offer the same amount of services. Either we have to have more revenue, which is why we're asking for a ballot issue, or our other option, if we're not successful in the ballot, is to decrease our services. And so I think they do understand that. We also, you know, really made sure as we messaged it that the items that are on that list are not a value judgment. I personally think all those things are very important, and they really contribute to the type of experience we want our children to have. You know, when I think about kids sitting in school and just having their core subjects all day, that's not a great experience. A lot of kids get up in the morning and come to school because they love art. They love music. They have a love of reading. They like spending time in the library. We know all those things are valuable. But we really, when we came up with the proposed cuts, we looked at what is required legally and what do we have to offer kids at the high school level, especially to make sure they're able to graduate and have their college admissions. So that was really how we formed that list, and we communicated that. So I think overall, the feedback that we've heard from our community has been pretty understanding, that they understand where we are and how we got here. So at this point, you know, we just want to be really clear and articulate the need for the resources to be able to continue to offer those services.
This is Untangled from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Superintendent Angela Hamburg from Westerville City Schools. I read some comments on some social media posts related to your earned income tax levy. There was a lot of positive and supportive, as you said, but some people did say that your list of cuts they believe is a scare tactic. What would you say to that, the people who say that you need to tighten your belt at an administrative level rather than all those cuts?
Well, I would say that we cut 7 administrators last time. We have another 12% on the list. We don't have as large of a group of administrators as other employee groups. And so we look more at, it's the highest percentage of cuts we're proposing. I would say that, you know, we put this on last fall as a property tax and did not put out a cut list ahead of time. We were able to trim back and make some cuts. And then we heard, well, we didn't realize things were going to be cut if it failed. So obviously we've gone another year now of deficit spending. We're cutting into our savings more. And so we wanted to be very clear so that our community understood what was at risk. You know, it's not a scare tactic. It's a reality of like what I just talked about earlier, that, you know, services cost money. We're a service industry. We provide a service to children and families. And if we don't have the revenue to pay for the services, then we have to reduce our services. And so we want to be very transparent with our community that here's the amount that we need. If we don't have that amount, then this is what we're looking at for next school year.
There is a lot of talk around the state about how property tax owners don't want to pay so much for schools if they don't have kids in school, right? Are you hearing the same thing from people who work in Westerville? I know you were explaining to me an earned income tax and who it impacts. So what is the reaction if someone earns money in Westerville but doesn't have a kid in school?
And again, just to clarify, for school taxes, whether it's a property tax or an earned income tax, it's only for the residents of our school district that would pay it. My answer to that is that public education is really the foundation of our society. And so I've always been a big believer in public education. 90% of our kids in Ohio, their families choose to attend public school. And I think it's really important, regardless of whether people have kids in school or not, that our society as a whole is educated. So, you know, we always talk about, I want my doctor to have a good education. I want my mechanic to have a good education. I want people to be able to communicate and collaborate and problem solve on whatever it is they're helping me with or I'm paying them to do. So if we want all of society to be lifted up and have opportunities, it's important that children are educated, receiving a good baseline education. And without that opportunity with public schools, it turns into education becoming for the haves and the have-nots. And I believe that public education is a great equalizer that gives all children the opportunity to succeed in life.
You mentioned that your state funding was reduced. I think I read, was it reduced by 25%? Is that right?
The share of state funding has gone down 25% over the last 4 years. So public education in Ohio is a shared responsibility between the local community and the state government. Our state, in a report that just came out, is 46th out of 50 in the amount that they support public schools in our nation. And so, as we have seen, we're paying less in state income tax than others. So we talk a lot about how high property taxes are in Ohio, and I agree, and I think we all would like to see a different model. I don't love the model we use in Ohio to fund our schools, but unfortunately, because we have so much less funding at a state level going into education, it's shifted the burden back to the local taxpayers to fund the schools. And so we have a lower sales tax rate and a lower state income tax rate than some states have. But we have a much higher property tax rate. So that's where we wanted to try to diversify that a little bit because we recognize that the model that we have been given has an over-reliance on property tax.
Now, lawmakers were saying throughout the whole entire last budget cycle that they are supplying more money to Ohio schools than they ever had before. And they're not seeing results, and schools are still continuing to have low test scores and not meet, the grades that they're looking for. What would you say to lawmakers who say that they are giving more money than they ever had before and they want to see better results?
Well, they just, one of our lawmakers put out a report that shows we're getting increase in funds, but that also included the money that they're putting toward private schools. So the state public schools overall in the state saw less than a 2% increase in the last budget bill. Westerville City Schools saw a decrease, but the private schools saw a much larger increase. So yes, they are putting more money into K-12 education, but not necessarily into our public schools.
Also, in the last budget cycle, there's a lot of talk at the State House about each district's cash carryover, they called it. It's basically how much money schools have in their savings account. So I looked at the 5-year forecast that the Department of Education and Workforce has, every school district put out. On June 30th, Westerville had $119 million in the bank. So what do you say to lawmakers who say that your district shouldn't have that much money in its savings account?
So we have a $219 million budget. We are actually structuring like this ballot issue, the amount that we're asking for, we're still deficit spending. So we are incorporating using some of that cash as part of our spend down plan over the next few years. A lot of districts do have, well, in our case, we have a higher cash balance right now because of the shifting around of funding when we had the COVID ESSER funds. But we also use that money for building projects. We have 25 school buildings in our district. Many of them are aging and need a lot of work. So we have lots of uses for those. We have transferred some of that into a capital fund so that we can take care of some of those things, also to help build school or to buy school buses. Just as an example on, obviously we're all dealing with high inflation and escalating costs right now. We have our school buses. Like just a few years ago, were $75,000. They've doubled in price. So we have a big year this year where we have to update. We have a replacement cycle of when does it make sense in terms of warranties and efficiency to replace buses. So we have a large year coming up. So we have plans for all of that money as part of our operations to take care of roofs, to take care of our HVAC systems, to replace buses, and also to help keep our tax requests lower because we're able to incorporate that cash into our operational scheme as well.
Well, just to end on before we run out of time, everything costs more. Everyone agrees property taxes are too high. The cost of educating a child costs more than it did several years ago. A lot of people out there are just tired of it all. What do you say to someone out in Westerville to get them to vote yes for your earned income tax levy?
I would say that we are working very hard to provide our kids with the great experience that our families have continued to expect. We have lots of op wonderful opportunities for our kids in terms of curriculum and extra activities that we want to be able to continue to provide. We do recognize that state property taxes are high across the board, including in our community. But again, I would just refocus and reframe that around the fact that that is the way school funding is designed in our state. Again, I think we all agree that we would like to be operating under a different system. In some states, schools are funded through state income tax and sales tax, and districts don't have to keep coming back to their voters. Unfortunately, this is the system we have. And so to be able to continue to operate and offer all the wonderful services we do need the additional revenue of this ballot issue.
You've been listening to Westerville City School Superintendent Angela Hamburg. Angela, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Coming up, we're going to hear from Olentangy schools who have a bond issue on the ballot. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you, explain it in a way that's easier to understand. This season, we're tackling the cost of learning. There are several different ways school districts can ask their communities for money. We just heard from Westerville, where they're asking for an income tax increase. Now we're going to hear from Olentangy schools. They're asking for a $235 million bond issue to build a new elementary school and a new high school. They say the buildings are needed to deal with overcrowding and to prepare for the district's growth in the state's fourth largest and fastest growing school district. Joining me now is Olentangy Superintendent Todd Meyer. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Olentangy's treasurer, Ryan Jenkins. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Well, Amy, thank you for having us.
And before we begin, just a moment of full disclosure on my part. My husband is a teacher in the Olentangy School District. Okay, Ryan, let's start with you. Olentangy is going out of its way to explain that this is a bond issue and not a property tax increase. All of your communication, your signs, they all say no new millage bond issue. So you are asking the community to vote and allow you to borrow money, and you promise they won't have to pay it back. Am I explaining that in the right way?
Not exactly. The ballot issue is to raise funds by borrowing money from investors to raise $235 million to construct the facilities. The principal and interest payments to the people, the investors that loan us the money, still has to be paid back by the residents of the community, but it can be paid back without increasing the tax rate that currently our residents are paying. So it must still be paid back, but we can do so without increasing the tax rate to be able to generate what we need to pay it back.
Okay, so you're using money you already have or already planned on having to pay it back instead of asking for additional dollars.
The current tax rate for our bond funds are high enough to be able to pay back existing bond funds that we have because we've built so many buildings in our district, and this additional bond issue should it pass.
Okay. And Todd, this is $235 million for two buildings, plus some maintenance on some current buildings. Tell me about the overcrowding that you keep talking about. That's why you need to build these buildings.
Yeah. So again, this is a no new millage bond issue to construct two buildings and immediate need for elementary 18 and high school 5. So the last decade, we grew by over 5,000 students, and we're projected to grow by another 5,000 the next 10 years. So for us, we took a look at addressing immediate need as far as the enrollment growth. It remains one of our biggest challenges. We grow by four to, on average, 400 to 500 students per year. So for us, currently, 7 out of 17 of our elementaries are at or over capacity, and we use 625 as a capacity number. The average elementary school in Ohio's enrollment is about 450. Our current average enrollment across our district is 650. So enrollment continues to grow for us, and for us to have enough capacity as far as enough rooms, facility-wise, to put students, we really need an 18th elementary. And then at the high school level, we currently have 4 high schools. Our high school capacity is 1,800. We are at or over capacity in all 4 of our high schools. Our newest high school, Berlin High School, actually just tied Orange High School as our highest enrolled high school. So again, over 1,800. And so for us, doing nothing, our high school enrollments will continue to grow. And they're continuing to grow at a rate, for example, like in the current Berlin high school attendance boundary, they would grow to 2,300, 2,700, over 3,000 students. So we need classroom space and facilities to put our students because of our continued growth. So that's really for us. We have to be able to accommodate the continued growth in the district, and it's it's not stopping.
Yeah. And Ryan, you have said in other interviews that you do not need to raise taxes because of expiring debt, increased revenue through growth, and sound fiscal management. So that that increased revenue part, does that mean higher property values and also more new properties being built in the area?
Essentially, yes. Over time, the district has grown exponentially in the value of the properties through new homes that get built, new businesses that come in. The increase in existing values of existing homes, and that allows that tax rate, so to speak, to spread more equitably across all of those homes, so that we don't have to increase the rate to be able to pay back what we've borrowed to build existing buildings. And again, should this issue pass, we would not have to increase the rate of taxation even more. It's not any one factor that you mentioned. It's a combination of all of them, but certainly the valuation growth is a part of that.
Now, Todd, Olentangy asked for a property tax levy bond issue combo March of last year to build 5 new buildings, but that failed. There was a campaign around the community with signs that read, "It's okay to vote no," and they did. So why do you think the community will pass this issue?
Yeah, so for us, we tried a proactive approach in the spring of 24 to really set our district up for the next 10 years facility-wise with a no new bond ask for 5 buildings. We also then combined that with a operating levy and a permanent improvement levy. We weren't successful, went down 2-1. So for us, we had to go back to the drawing board. We've had a lot of conversation with our Board of Education and our constituents within the district. So we landed here in what we think is the most cost-conscious, cheapest ask that we can ask of our community to, again, address the growth. You know, here in Olentangy, nobody denies that we're growing. I mean, there's no debate. We continue to grow. Everybody can see it. So for us, that's our biggest challenge, and we're trying to address the continued growth that will happen over the next 10 years by putting a no new millage bond issue, which we feel is the most cost conscious, and again, being cognizant of what we're hearing back from our constituents in our community.
This is Untangled from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how school districts ask their community for money. Olentangy is asking for a $235 million bond issue, and we're talking today with Superintendent Todd Meyer and Treasurer Ryan Jenkins. Ryan, the state recognized years ago that they don't fund schools at a high enough level for all the construction and infrastructure needs. So they created this school building fund. Why not use money from that state school building fund for your projects?
So the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission has been around for a while, and they distribute state dollars using an equity formula. The equity formula is similar to the same way the state funds operating dollars to schools, in that districts that are viewed as having higher property wealth and then higher income wealth of their constituents tend to be much, much lower on the scale when it comes to the split that they get between state and local. Olentangy schools would get about 20 cents on the dollar from the Facilities Construction Commission based on the formula that the OFCC puts in place. We're regarded, as I mentioned, as a higher wealth, higher income district. So it's not like in Southeast Ohio where some schools down there got as much as 80 to 90 cents on the dollar. When we combine that reality with the construction technologies that we have gotten very good at over the years, we build buildings very efficiently. We build buildings very rapidly. We actually believe that our cost per square foot and the way we approach construction in this district, we build more cheaply, and cheaply as in cost, not in quality, than if we were to try to go through the OFCC. In fact, the savings that we would get, so to speak, in the dollars back from the OFCC, in many ways could also be also offset by the construction standards that the OFCC requires in some instances that don't necessarily match the construction standards that we have as a district.
Okay. So, it basically is that the state doesn't give as much money to wealthy districts, so you wouldn't get as much out of the building fund. I understand.
They don't give as much. And then some of the things that they require would
slow
actually
you
cost
down.
More for us.
Yeah.
You got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you build these two buildings, if it passes, what happens in 2028 when they open? You need to operate them. You're going to need more teachers, more staff. Are you going to have to ask for a tax increase then? Either one of you can take that.
So I'll start, and then Ryan, if you want to jump in. So right now, in our financial forecast, we have enough dollars to operate these buildings. So if successful, these buildings will open. In our district, we continue to grow. So the majority of our operating budget goes towards staffing. And when we open buildings, you can imagine we just don't hire all new staff to open the buildings. Students move, so we'll have a high percentage of our staff who also moves. However, we will have to hire additional staff to operate the buildings. And we get this question a lot. And so in our district, again, on average, we grow 400 to 500 students a year. So with growth, we have to hire people. We're a people business in education. So it's not if, it's when. We will have to come back for additional operating dollars to operate the entire district, not mm-hmm. these two buildings, to operate the entire district.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So if you're going to, you'll have to operate the entire district. The whole district is growing. What about the balance between the state house? I mean, do you talk to the lawmakers that represent Powell, Lewis Center, other areas of Olentangy about your portion of the state money?
Absolutely. And we have conversations with them all of the time as far as, the need for additional state dollars to fund Olentangy schools. And we continue to advocate for our position being Olentangy's position for additional state dollars, because for every additional state dollar that we receive from the state is one less tax dollar than we have to ask from our local constituents. So Ryan, if you want to kind of go deeper maybe into that.
Yeah, we spent an awful lot of time in the spring talking to our legislators about the Fair School Funding Formula. We specifically pointed out pieces of the Fair School Funding Formula that we felt needed to be fully funded. One of the biggest pieces was the cost sets. We're pleased with that, you know, we didn't go backwards in school funding. We basically are treading water with what we get from the state, but that's also with the state not implementing cost sets or the cost of inputs moving beyond 2022. We did some analysis that if the Fair School funding formula as originally written had been fully phased in and the cost sets had been adjusted throughout the life of our five-year forecast, that it could have made as much as a $40 to $50 million difference for our district over the next 5 years. That's not ultimately what happened. But, you know, we'll continue to turn out an excellent product here in Olentangy Schools. But it is a situation where, as a district, the state funding formula continues to look at Olentangy as an area where local funding is going to be the predominant source.
Another issue just before, before we run out of time, another issue that kept coming up with the lawmakers is this whole idea of like how much money districts have on hand, not just yours, all of them. They called it the cash carryover. So it's the amount of money that districts estimate they'll have in the future. And the state is saying schools, and Olentangy's used as an example, has too much money in its savings and they should be spending it rather than asking for higher property taxes. So I did look at your the five-year forecast on the Department of Education and Workforce website. It looks like Olentangy's ending cash balance on June 30th was $157 million. And then if you look at your future projections, it does go down to $18 million by 2028. But why have $157 million on hand?
So $157 million is only 40% of an average year's operational expenses. As a district, we have to keep a reasonable carryover to be able to meet day-to-day operational needs. And when we're locally funded by property taxes, those property tax settlements we get twice a year. Mm-hmm. So we have to be able to operate and last for up to 6 months between paydays, so to speak. So imagine as a private resident, if you got paid two times a year by your employer, wouldn't it seem reasonable to have at least 40 to 50% carryover so that you could make ends meet? And that's the situation that Olentangy is in. $157 million certainly sounds like a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's 40% of our annual operating expenses. Our general fund this year is eclipsing a $400 million budget. So while I realize that that's a lot of money, it still represents money in, you know, quantity as far as for dollars. It is 40% of our operating reserves that we have to have to be able to operate our district in between quote unquote paydays. All businesses, any entity, any homeowner has to have a reasonable reserve to be able to make it through, you know, times of stress or difficulty, or to make sure. I certainly wouldn't want to be in a position where I would have to tell our employees we didn't have enough to pay them on a given Friday.
And Todd, we only have a minute left, but I just wanted to end with you. People are exhausted over talking about property taxes. People, you know, say all over the state are saying property taxes are a problem. They want state lawmakers to fix it. What do you say to people who are just exhausted by the whole thing? I know you're trying to differentiate the bond package that you're trying to pass from it, but it all feels the same, I guess, to someone with a house. So what would you say to them whenever they go to vote related to your school district and any issue you put on the ballot?
Sure. We're for sure cognizant of the burden that continues to be placed on the property tax the property owners relative to taxes. So, you know, I would say in Olentangy, we continue to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. Our cost per pupil is lower than a state average. We're lower than similar districts like us for sure. We're going to continue to try to find ways to save and cost avoid in our district. As a matter of fact, since 2020, we've saved over $50 million or avoided cost. So we're going to continue to do that and be good stewards of the taxpayer dollars. And we say this, you know, our students get an excellent education at an exceptional value here in Olentangy. And we produce a really, really good product here in Olentangy's far as providing that student experience for our students.
Well, we have been talking with Olentangy Superintendent Todd Meyer. Todd, thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
And Olentangy's Treasurer Ryan Jenkins. Thank you, Ryan, for your time.
Thank you, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk with Parma City Schools about their property tax levy. That's when Untangled from All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you. This season, we're tackling the cost of learning. Just like the old adage, there's more than one way to cook an egg, there's also more than one way to raise money for an Ohio school district. This hour, we're talking with three different school districts asking voters to support local schools in three different ways. In Westerville, it's an earned income tax levy. In Olentangy, it's a bond issue. And in Parma, it's a property tax levy. Property taxes are the more traditional way schools ask their communities for money. About two-thirds of a homeowner's property taxes go to local schools. To tell us more about the property tax levy on the November ballot in Parma is Dr. Scott Hunt, superintendent of Parma City Schools. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Parma has not passed a levy since 2011, which is a long time. You've tried to pass them several times over the years. What has changed that makes you think that it will pass this time in November 2025?
So thanks for the question. So first, this is my third month in the district. Mm-hmm. So I came on in early July and have had to do a lot of learning about what it is the district needs and why are we asking for a levy again. So in May, there was a levy on the ballot and we did not get through that. And as you said, since 2011, it's been a challenge to get our property owners to support the district in a levy. It's really unfortunate. This is the only way that we can generate revenue for the district. We can't invest in Bitcoin. We're not going to win the lottery. So we have to rely on our taxpayers to help us out. So we're doing some things different here. I've dubbed this a new chapter for Parma City Schools. And when it comes to the levy, we're trying to take a different approach. We are currently working with a group out of Columbus called Support Ohio Schools. They've got 25 plus years of levy campaign experience. And I've worked with that group previously in my former district when I was superintendent at Cardinal Local. Had been 25 years since we passed the levy there, but got one through in 2018. We're trying to stay away from talking about tax increase. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's what this entails. But we're asking our communities, and we have three communities here, Parma Heights and Seven Hills, to really make an investment in the future of our students here. This is less about a property tax and more about what do you want in the next 5, 10, 15 years for our students as they leave us. And Parma City Schools is a very interesting place. Those that I talk to, our local government officials, our community members, this is a community where people are born, raised, go to school, and work when they leave our school system. It's really kind of a unique opportunity, I think, now to support the schools and build on the future.
Did you think about trying a different tactic since property tax levies have failed in the past, especially as recently as May? Like Westerville is doing this earned income tax levy. Did you think about maybe trying it a different way?
I think the board has had those discussions. And as I was onboarding here, it was already kind of in the works that this was something that was going to come up and that we were going to continue to ask for the 10-year operating levy this time around. So we may have some different discussion if we're not able to get this supported in November. It might look a little different in the future, but you know, time will tell on that.
So this levy that you have for November will cost a homeowner $240 a year in property if for a property valued at $100,000. What are you saying you're going to use the money for? Is it just standard basic operations? Anything in particular?
Yeah, so we have to be able to operate. One of the things that is very important in a district is that we are able to meet our board policy around days of cash. Our cash reserve policy is at 60 days. When we hit 2027, we are at 24 days of cash, and I expect that number to go down slightly, given that we have a new five-year forecast. It's due mid-October. When you hit that, when you're not meeting your board policy and you're at that level of days of cash to run your operation, that's when the state comes in and puts you in some kind of a status. You're either in watch, a caution watch, or emergency. And at that point, you start to lose control of how you can spend your dollars to support learning for students. So this is very important that when we talk about why we need the money, that is only one reason, that we won't be able to operate after 2027 as efficiently as we can if we had the support of the community.
Do you talk about what will be cut if this does not pass? Earlier in the program, we talked with Westerville City Schools, and they have a very long list of things that will be cut if it doesn't pass.
Yeah, we've talked globally at this point, but as was stated, about 83% of our budget is spent on people, on teachers, on support staff. And when you're spending that amount of money on people, you know, typically that is the first thing that you look at. How do you cut back on the number of people that you have to hire to run your system and to make sure kids get what they need? So we've not talked about specific, but certainly it's going to be cuts in staffing, potentially cuts in programs that we offer students. We'll take a close look at transportation, certainly around fees when it comes to our participation fees in the district. All of those things will be part of the discussion. We don't have a specific plan at this point. We're hopeful that we can get through November, but if we don't, then we'll start talking in more detail about those areas.
This is Untangled, the Cost of Learning from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about a property tax levy on the November ballot for Parma City Schools with Superintendent Scott Hunt. Now, you mentioned you're new to the job. This is your first year as superintendent in Parma. Are you able to make some changes in the way you're talking to the community about this? Can you do something that hasn't resonated in the past that the past superintendent wasn't able to do?
I think, as I shared, we're taking the approach that this is a new chapter and that this what we're talking about is an investment in the future of our students. So I am sharing widely just kind of the facts about our finances. And I mentioned the 60-day cash policy. But I think what individuals, taxpayers don't necessarily understand is, you know, how district finances work. We're not in this situation because of anything that we've done. We've been cut by the federal government in our title programs, $1.3 million, over $5 million from the state. In terms of what they've been able to provide and not really moving forward with the Fair School Funding Plan. Those things affect our bottom line and how we operate. The other thing that is unique to Parma City Schools is that we run our own career tech ed programming. We have two comprehensive high schools. What does that mean? That means that we're not sending students to career centers. We do all of that in-house. And that is priceless, actually, because we're serving all of our kids who have the desire to be in those programs. They get their certifications and many of them stay here. Why that's important to the taxpayer to understand is that if we eliminated those programs, they would pick up the tax burden. They'd pick up, as of 2023 tax tables, a 1.89 mils in operating and PI expense, which would add to their tax bill an additional $20+ a month in taxes, because they would then have to pay for those students to go to those buildings.
For the career tech kids to go somewhere else, like a county, they'd have to pay for the county to teach them. Okay. Now, the district closed Parma High School and you closed an elementary school recently as a way to save costs, consolidate things. So was that enough? I mean, the levy is still needed, as you're saying, but you did do some work in consolidation.
Yeah, and I wasn't here for those discussions or those closings, but my understanding is, yes, it did save money. But when you have rising costs, rising staffing, inflation, etc., and we get zero in addition dollars, again, it's the only mechanism we have is to go back to our tax base here in our communities. So we still need those dollars to operate, which is why we're going out to the community and asking them to support the effort.
Now, you mentioned that you're getting between $4 and $5 million less from the state than you expected. Yes. But there was a lot of talk at the State House during the last budget cycle about every school district and the cash they had on hand and the savings account, like the cash carryover, they called it. So yes. I looked at your 5-year forecast and your ending cash balance was about $55 million on June 30th. So state lawmakers would argue you can absorb that $4 million or $5 million loss from the state if you have $55 million in the bank. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I would say that that comes in that cash reserve policy discussion, that days of cash. So yes, we ended up pretty well in 25. This year, we're just going to end up, we're projecting just above our cash policy. So that $55 million rainy day fund, I suppose you could call it, mm-hmm. that gets spent down when we can't meet the obligations in the general fund. So that carryover gets spent. And when we hit 27, that's where it becomes kind of dire straits for us, that we're well under that policy and it would be hard for us to continue to operate as we are today.
Yeah, your 5-year forecast shows you running out of money, as you mentioned. What would you say to state lawmakers? What do they need to know about running a school district, like yours, about the money needed and the money it takes? If you had the ear of a lawmaker, what would you tell them?
I would say this, that, you know, there is a plan in place that I know many superintendents and others across the state worked to make sure that we could get fair funding in place for our public schools. I just urge them to take a closer look at that and fund it at the levels that are current, not at previous years' levels. That's important. And then we want to make sure from a global perspective that our state is attractive. Just like I want my school district to be attractive, I want people to come to the school district, to come to the state of Ohio, to live here and to work here. So to me, this is also a more abstract concept that we want the state of Ohio to be attractive. People don't move to a community because Intel or Google or Amazon have a warehouse. They move there because they can afford to live there, they can raise a family there, and they have the opportunity to get a good education from their schools.
What are you hearing from the community? I know you said you're new. You've only been on the job since, you know, July, just a few months. Whenever you told them that you're going to go, you were on the ballot in May when you weren't there, and now you're going to go back to the ballot in November. What are you hearing from the community at school board meetings? What are they saying about this move, this property tax levy?
Yeah, I think from some it's going to be challenging because we are asking people to raise taxes. But my sense is the vibe here is positive. And if we can get the right information out to our communities, that we have a good chance of them supporting us. So I'm getting some positive feedback. But I know that, you know, it's that levy fatigue, and this district has been fatigued for quite some time.
Yeah, if the district hasn't passed a levy since 2011, is that fatigue still there? I mean, it seems like it's raining fatigue that dates back for more than 10 years. Like, how do you just convince someone like this is the system that the state has set up? Property taxes pay for schools. You need to say yes at some point.
Yeah, I think this comes with kind of the strategy of mm-hmm. let's call it an investment. And, you know, this is anytime you are looking to turn, the Titanic, you do it incrementally. You can't just turn the wheel and turn everything around in an instant. So incrementally, our strategy is to make sure that we're as transparent as we can be, that we're showing that we are fiscally responsible with taxpayer dollars. And then we're trying to highlight the value, telling the stories of our students, our families, our staff out widely in our communities, so they understand what the value of a Normandy High School or a Valley Forge High School diploma represents for our students when they leave here.
And I get just to end on the idea that you had a levy in May and now you have this one in November, just a few months later. Is it the same amount or did you ask for a different amount?
It is actually the same amount, 6.9 mils, $23 million, $240 per year.
All right. So what's your final pitch in the last 30 seconds we have? If someone is listening right now who lives in Parma, what would you say to get them to vote yes?
I would say we have some opportunity moving forward. Let's invest in the future of our students and our families, our three communities, and our school district. And then we could talk about building, whatever that, however you define building, what does that look like? We have to be able to operate first. Then we can talk about new opportunities for building projects, new programs, and supporting our students and families in the district.
We've been talking with Parma City School Superintendent Dr. Scott Hunt. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And be sure to subscribe to the Untangled podcast so you can hear all 5 episodes in this series. Next time, we're going to talk to 3 different school districts to get 3 perspectives: urban, suburban, and rural. This is Untangled, the Cost of Learning, from All Sides and WOSU. I'm Amy Jurevich.